How's it going? And welcome to episode 249 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings, and we have a great show as we hit our third overall fab of the 2026 season. And Kevin, we typically, at least in the past, have had these nice middle of the show like topics that we usually talk about. There is way too much news happening after the first full week of the season. I don't think we have time to go into that.
But yeah, that's been a trend recently, I think. Yeah. After the off season, you know, not talking about news most episodes, and we're still going close to 2 hours on many of those. Now news really has to do with what we're here for. So we got to slide it back in. And yeah, we would have 4 hour shows if we tried to do our focus topic, as I believe we used to call it. Yeah. But I'm sure we'll mention something. We have a little extra fab day coming up this week.
That's for right. Many of us. Yes. Yeah. Yes. More fab, the better. Fab 3.5, right? on the slate. But like I said, there is a ton to talk about. A lot of it happening today. And so I think we need to start off with something that did happen today. And we will hit up all this offensive, but mostly, unfortunately, bad news. But it could mean good news for someone else. And that's where you got to take advantage of. So first things first, in L.A., Mookie Betts did leave his Saturday game early with lower back pain. Dave Roberts did say after the game that he expects Betts to sit out the next few games. But he's going to await test results to determine if he's going to need an IL stint, but it definitely sounds like that is a possibility. So who do you see filling in most of the void? We talk about this all the time. Shortstop is not one of those positions that most teams want to platoon or rotate around. So is there an obvious choice to kind of fill in shortstop every day that Betts is out, or do you see them mixing and matching?
Well, I think for the most part, it's just going to mean it depends on what happens in the few days. But I think if it truly is something that they need a few days to assess, give him some rest and reassess, we're probably just looking at Miguel Rojas getting more playing time. We could slide Espinal in other places as well when we need him. But typically those guys are just going to play against lefties. And let me double check here quickly. But the Dodgers face all righties this week. So they aren't the guys they really want in there. I'm not sure, Adam. You might know more about this because I am very interested in Kyle Freeland with Alex Freeland. Yeah, Alex Freeland. I'm very interested in him. He's been playing second base for the Dodgers. He came up as a third baseman. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's a possibility there as well. However, either way, before the Betts injury, I was liking the playing time we were starting to see out of Alex Freeland the last couple of days. This will solidify that because they definitely are going to need him in the lineup regardless of what they do. Not certain if he can play some shortstop. I expect to see Miguel Rojas in there at least for the first few days. And then if this is more serious, I think the Dodgers will go get somebody.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Freeland a little bit last week as well. He was like third or fourth on one of my waterfall bids that I ended up grabbing last week just to kind of see how that playing time could possibly roll out. He, at least to start the season, seemed to be on the strong side of the platoon with the aforementioned Miguel Rojas, who started at second base against both lefties over last weekend, but yeah. Freeland's only faced righties ever since. Rojas did come in to relieve Betts on Saturday. So I think that that's a clear indication that he's the obvious choice to come in and just play shortstop every day, which would then free up second base to be completely Alex Freeland's job, except when Espinal needs to come in and just like spell him for a game here or there. So I do like Freeland, the Freeland call out quite a bit.
Yeah, you were one of the few that liked him last week. He's still only 13% rostered in main events, zero in online championships in the 12 teamers out there. And I think he's 12 team viable with this, with what has happened the past week, especially facing six righties this week.
Yep. And even if it's just like Dave Roberts said, Betts is going to miss the next few games. He didn't just say he's going to end the series. We'll see what happens next series. Betts is probably missing at least half of the first series next week as well. So Freeland right. should have, and like you said, they're facing all righties. So worst case, Freeland's on the strong side of that platoon at second base anyway. At least it would appear so far. Jump to the next one just because let's just get the all-stars, the superstars out of the way. Juan Soto left Friday's game with right calf tightness, which ended up becoming a light sprain, calf sprain. That also kept him out of Saturday's game, and more testing will be done there as well. And there's still, again, just like Betts, sounds like the IL is still on the table, but has no official word yet. Anyone worth watching in the Mets lineup that will get the added playing time if Soto does miss an extended period of time, at least through next week?
I think it's going to be Heinemann, their backup catcher. He's started the past couple days. I think that he gets a little more playing time. They called up Valenzuela, and I think he will be the backup. If this is more serious, I would expect Toronto to make a move here and go find somebody. I don't think this is who they would go with long term. This one hurts personally, Adam. I only have two teams that roster Alejandro Kirk, but they're my CLQ main event, my CLQ online championship. So I'm searching for a catcher this week.
All right. I'm going to blame myself because I jumped, but I definitely asked you about Juan Soto and the Mets and not Alejandro Kirk.
Oh, you did?
In Toronto. I jumped our outline for anybody watching or listening at home.
Totally, I could have swore I was listening to you, though. I really do. I really thought I heard you ask about that.
But yeah,
I was reading it as I must have been reading as you were talking.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, Soto. Again, I don't have a lot of shares, but I have him in a couple of larger leagues, including my main event. So this is something I am going to have to take a really close look at here. The Mets have been kind of funny this week. All of a sudden we see Mark Vientos playing every day and performing well. And we see, Brett Beatty has been moving around a little bit there. Polanco's been out of the lineup for a couple of days and now back in it. So we've had a lot of movement in the Mets lineup anyway. But they're moving Carson Benge around in the outfield a little bit. I really think if the Mets, really quick here, yeah, they do face a couple of lefties this week. That helps them out a little bit. Because they have Tyrone Taylor. He'll play those games, I would assume. Jared Young has gotten in there versus three of the past four righties they have faced. So we might see him out there in the outfield. But this does seem fairly minor. They did say a minor sprain of his calf. So hopefully this isn't long-term, possibly even avoid the IL. But I just think in the near term, Tyrone Taylor versus lefties, and then we'll see Jared Young in there. Out in the outfield. He played first base the first couple games of the season, but then he's in there in left field on Saturday.
Yeah. Definitely seems that way. I mean, Jared Young, as you mentioned, was out there in left field on Saturday with Soto's first full game missed as well. So, and now, yeah, I mean, to jump right back into it, the other injury that we saw leave this week was Alejandro Kirk. He fractured his left thumb. He'll be out for a while. There's no question here. All right. So he'll be out for quite some time. I didn't see an exact time frame except for
they said they won't know until he has more imaging done on Monday.
But yeah, so unfortunately, this won't be the first fracture that we talk about today. And a lot of the other ones are quoted anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks. So I venture to guess that Kirk will be in a similar boat, especially as, a catcher behind the plate Maybe he gets back in there a little earlier as a DH if his thumb can handle swinging the bat. But yeah, any other further notes on that situation and how much it hurts all of your teams?
No, that was about it. Hopefully I can find a catcher better than Heinemann. Although I think he is going to get the playing time. He will be in my waterfall in the 15 team league.
Yeah,
probably not the 12, but in a 15, he'll be in my waterfall.
All right. Well, let's talk about, we're talking about injuries. So there's a name we have to bring up. It's just like contractually obligated to do this. And then that is, of course, Byron Buxton. He left Friday's game with a forearm contusion. Positive news, though, was that x-rays showed that nothing was broken. He did sit out Saturday, but do you expect to see him, if nothing else, just because of his injury history, do you expect the Twins to keep him out of the lineup on Sunday and beyond?
Maybe Sunday, but that would be about it, I would think. You know, for all of his history, and then finally for the first time, right, playing well over 500 plate appearances, he had a, back in 2017, I think 511. But he got close to 550 last season, and he played banged up now and then. I watch a lot of AL Central baseball, and Byron Buxton was playing in games when he was banged up. This isn't soft tissue like he's had so many of. It's not a hamstring. It's not a calf. It's a bruise. So he'll be back in there when it stops hurting.
There you go. We have seen him come back in recent time. Even last year when he missed time, he came back after the minimum. He came back and they just went right back to what he was doing. So yeah, I agree. Again, just contractually obligated to bring him up.
Absolutely.
At all, if we're talking about injuries. Sal Frelick left Saturday's game as well with left side tightness. No additional news that I've seen on that. That did happen just recently this evening. I mean, I guess it's worth mentioning, timing is everything. Milwaukee also made a trade earlier, or they made a couple trades, but the one I care about here earlier in the week was that they traded for Luis Matos from San Francisco, who had we had all been reporting on the fact that that was going to happen. He just didn't know where he was going to leave San Francisco, but we didn't know where. They basically just paid for him as well with cash considerations, the Milwaukee did. So if Frelick misses any time, if this left side tightness is anything more than what we've seen out of maybe Buxton or even Soto, do you expect to see a little bit more Luis Matos? Do you think there's anybody else in Milwaukee that can, you know, that you might be considering throwing in waterfall bids just on the possibility of extra playing time?
I think we might see, as we did, that the Brewers had a doubleheader on Saturday versus the Royals, and the Royals threw two right-handed pitchers as the starters. So for the second time, we did see Brandon Lockridge get a start versus a righty for the second time this season. So he might be in there on more of a regular basis. I do think Luis Matos will be in there versus lefties. For that, Garrett Mitchell, Brandon Lockridge, I think they get a little bit of solidified playing time and may play Mitchell versus a lefty once in a while, Lockridge versus a righty. But I think Matos will definitely get in there versus lefties. I don't see a whole lot other than those guys splitting the extra at-bats. Yeah.
Yeah, Matos has not gotten a start so far, but to his credit, they only faced a lefty on the first day that he was officially on the roster, so probably just not enough time to get him to start that game, if anything. All right, so
I just want to say the same thing I said last week, though. Please don't put Christian Yelich in the outfield. Let him DH.
It's true. You did just say that last week, and I'm like, oh no, now there's a new opportunity to force to force the issue. Let's see how Milwaukee handles it. All right, got a couple more hitter injuries, and then unfortunately we got a lot of pitching injuries as well to talk about. So Jordan Lawler finally hitting his first home run, looking pretty good, and then he fractured his right wrist. I hope he didn't do it while hitting the home run. I actually didn't see when it happened, but that would have been just really par for the course for Lawler and how he's been treated in Arizona, I think. But yeah, he's out. He's one of those fractures that are probably going to keep him out for 6 to 8 weeks. So probably through the end of, we won't see him again until the end of May. Along with that, it's just get all the Arizona out there as well. Pavin Smith hits the IL with left elbow inflammation earlier this week, but that did open the door for a debut from Jose Fernandez, and he had quite the debut. Is this end up being like a one for one swap with Fernandez and Lawler or in playing time, or how do you see this shaping out with both Smith out, obviously Lawler out for a while, and then Fernandez making the impression that he did?
Yeah, they also called up Adrian Del Castillo, and he DH'd on Saturday. And I like Adrian Del Castillo and Jose Fernandez both a whole lot. Unfortunately, this really only helps one of them. Although I had Jose Fernandez down in our notes, one, because he just became available. But two, Carlos Santana is off to a horrific start to the season behind the plate. And Jose Fernandez actually got the start over Carlos Santana at first base versus a right-handed starter on Saturday. So I was already optimistic that we might start seeing Jose Fernandez get more playing time. And this helps because they can move that designated hitter around. Adrian Del Castillo, the catcher for Arizona, will probably get some of the DH opportunities, but I think between the two of them, I hope they get all of Jordan Lawler's at bats between these two guys, and they both find a few more because I like them both a lot.
Yeah. Not to correct you or not, but I believe you meant James McCann, obviously having the bad start behind the plate. Santana might also, actually I haven't looked at Santana's.
Oh yeah. No, Santana's been horrific. He's hitting .043. In 25 plate appearances, which is about maxed out plate appearances for the amount of games they've played. So, yeah.
Do you think Castillo just spends all of his time at DH, or do you think it takes him a long time to get in eligibility elsewhere?
I think it takes a while.
It took a
Moreno injury for him to get to keep that catcher eligibility when he had it. Moreno's going to be back there most days.
So a lot going on in Arizona, a lot to keep your eye out on. As you mentioned, Jose Fernandez did start at first base today, but has not been in the lineup nearly as much as his debut would have kind of forced the issue. So again, didn't force the issue. Last hitter news here is one of the first positive things that I get to talk about today. Mickey Moniak, he's back with the Rockies after a minimum stay in the IL to begin the season. Does he just slot in as the pretty much everyday DH for Colorado
This week? Yeah, because I think he's at a minimum large side platoon, and Colorado has a 7-game week, all of them right-handed starters.
Yeah, not really. And we talked about this before the season started when it was already announced he was going to start the season on the IL or move to the IL like on day one or something like that. It didn't really make a whole lot of difference for Colorado. One, they spent so much time on the road to start the season, and now they're finally home or heading home. And so just slotting them back in really doesn't really do a whole lot for the rest of that lineup.
They got Tyler Freeman back as well off the IL this week, and so he'll probably get those starts versus lefties, but they don't face any this week.
So, yep, who cares? All right, we got lots of pitching, unfortunately, mostly all injury notes to talk about, and we will get to all those right after this break. All right, one of the more, hopefully you had this one on your bingo card because it seemed like it was inevitable, especially after his debut. But Justin Verlander hits the IL with left hip inflammation. He unfortunately had not made his start back in Detroit for the first time since he was with the team so many years ago. So it'll take him at least 15 more days until that event happens. But that is two times through the order, who is filling the rotation spot for the Tigers with Verlander on the shelf?
They were at a six man, and I think they just go to five.
Let's go to five.
I think it's that easy. Yep.
Well, there we go. You heard it here.
I really think it's that easy, which so that means that we get an extra two step from a pitcher this week. And it appears that that will be Casey Mize, and then Scooble will get a two-step. Scooble's at Minnesota and home versus Miami. I wish I had more than one share of Tarik Scooble. But yeah, Casey Mize gets that same two-step. He's highly rostered as well.
Yeah. They do. I mean, for what's they don't have an off day until the 13th of April. So for the next like 2 weeks straight or a week and a half straight, they'll be, you know, in and out, in and out, in and out. So if there was a possibility of seeing a spot start out of somebody in Detroit, this would be the stretch where you might see it, or maybe they even do a bullpen game at some point throughout this time period. So, yeah, just keep an eye on that, on how that irons itself out. And yeah, if you get some extra innings out of those guys, more power to you.
Yeah, I think AJ Hinch, I think he likes managing. He likes those bullpen days. He likes being able to use Tyler Holt and then Brant Herder a little earlier in games and go see what they can do. So that's what I expect. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, those would be the ones you go after in the when we talk about ratios then, just because it's like exactly. If you can vulture that win, possibly, then, you know, that's something you got to know who the first man up is going to be in those situations. This all right, your Alejandro Kirk hurts you. Cade Horton hurts me here. Yeah. He heads to the IL after leaving his Friday start early with forearm tightness, the dreaded forearm tightness, elbow tightness, whatever, shoulder even, anything with your throwing arm at any point. No bueno. I expect that Horton is hitting the IL. They had their rain out today, so they haven't officially, which is really annoying, especially in your daily moves leagues. I can't put him on my IL there until tomorrow. But what are you expecting to see out of the rotation in Chicago with Horton expected to miss more than the minimum?
Probably Colin Ray. That's what Jason has over at Roster Resource. He has him sliding in. Now, he did throw 57 pitches on Friday, but Cade Horton would not be due to pitch again until Wednesday. So it lines up. I think that's what we're going to see, is Colin Ray saved for next Wednesday. They could, you know, use him on Sunday in a short relief role and him still be ready to go. So that's what I expect. I did read that the choice is probably between Ray and Ben Brown, and I have been so big on Ben Brown in the past, but every time we saw him last year, it did not go well. So right. I think it's going to be Colin Ray.
Yeah. And Colin Ray had a lot of stints last year of positive outputs, as a starter as well. So very surprising in most cases, but I'm sure plenty of you out there took advantage of that and just kind of ran with it as long as you could. This could be that start of that same situation for Ray. Doesn't hurt, you know, that if he gets that start on Wednesday in Tampa, that's, you know, they're not playing in Steinbrenner Field anymore. They're back in the Trop, much, much better place to pitch. And then worst case, you know, he gets pushed back a day. They face Pittsburgh at home. And Chicago is still a little chilly on the chillier side in April. So good landing spot across the board for the Cubs this coming week. All right. Cody Pont. This is a whole bunch of Toronto news here. Not a whole bunch, just one more piece. Cody Ponce, he has a right ACL sprain. He's going to miss significant time. And then just a couple days later, the Toronto Blue Jays signed Patrick Corbin to a 1 year major league deal. If I read that correctly, I'm pretty sure it was major league deal. So he'll need a little bit of time to ramp up, but I expect him to be, you know, active on the roster sooner rather than later. And I made a note here just to remind everybody. Meanwhile, Lucas Giolito is still looking for a job. seemed like a pretty obvious spot here, I guess. But no, not so much. Patrick Corbin did this with Texas. I feel like he did this with Texas last year, and he just ran with it, right? He just had the job the rest of the year. Not that he was always usable, but, you know, in a deep 15 teamer with the right matchups, he was always on your list. Does he automatically become, does he enter your list when we talk about wins and strikeouts later on in the show, just because he has a job?
I think so. You know, I've always loved Patrick Corbin in matchups versus teams that are not good versus lefties. And Toronto does have an off day Thursday. So they have Mason Fluharty that's going to start for them today. And then they'll have that off day Thursday. So they can go right back to Eric Lauer for the first game of their Minnesota series next weekend after he pitches on Sunday. He'll be ready to go again on Friday. So they don't need a starter another starter until Monday, April 13th. And I was just going to look really quick to see who Toronto faces that Monday. And it is, I apologize, I should have had this ready.
Toronto.
Because I knew this is exactly where I was going to go. They'll be off that Monday. So that's another off day. At Milwaukee. I'm sure I'll be in on Patrick Corbin at some point this season, more than once, multiple times, I am certain, but not yet.
We'll just put a pin on that one for now. Very unfortunate news for the likes of Cody Ponce, who just made his return to Major League Baseball, and now will be out of Major League Baseball for quite some time. Easy drop at this point on Ponce. No reason to really hold on to him, especially in deeper leagues, Kevin.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
Another one that becomes a much easier drop than he already might have been for many is Johan Oviedo. He hits the IL for Boston. I'm hit this again. Note solidifying Connolly early spot in the rotation a bit longer, if that was even in question at this point. But Oviedo is still 47% rostered in the main event. And some poor souls still 8% of those actually had to start him this past week. Again, I guess more of a question. Easy drop now at this point. I mean, he already was kicked out of the rotation, and now he'll be on the IL for a questionable amount of time.
Yeah, and then have to build back up.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's not. I'm trying to figure out the way to say this nicely. He's not someone I'm going to stash for that long.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, beyond having infinite IL stints in a Yahoo League or Fantasy League. That's goodbye. All right, another big one here, Zach Eflin. He hit the IL for Baltimore after leaving his game early this week with right elbow discomfort. He's already gotten an opinion, though it hasn't been announced what that opinion is, so he's already going for a second opinion. But there's not usually a situation where you're looking for a second opinion because you liked the first opinion. You got to be assuming that the worst at this point for Eflin, which is very unfortunate, obviously, after coming back from, his back surgery and looking really good over the spring and having a pretty good first start as well this season. So what are you doing with Eflin, and what are you eyeballing in Baltimore, if anything?
Usually I am an advocate of, yes, I think Eflin is going to be a drop, but I'm going to wait until we hear something more definite. But I already moving him to the IL before getting results and scheduling a second opinion. We were talking about this off air. I think I'm dropping Eflin this week, unfortunately, because he was looking really good. So once he came back the end of last year and this spring and early in the season. So that's very unfortunate. And I think it's either, I was almost certain it was going to be Dean Kramer taking his spot, but we're hearing Cade Povich Rumbles as well. So I was a big fan of him when he first got called up last season. It didn't go well. He performed better in a couple of other spot starts throughout the year. I will be interested in whichever one it is. If we don't know yet tomorrow night, I'm probably leaning Kramer getting the spot this week. And it appears that he would line up. Who's when's their next start come up? It would be
Monday. Yeah, I mean, so probably against in Chicago against the White Sox.
Yep, White Sox. And then it's San Francisco coming to town, Arizona at Cleveland. Yeah, either one of these guys, at least for the next couple of weeks, they have a fairly decent schedule coming up, even at my Royals. They won't always score runs. Either one of these guys, but I would lean Kramer if we don't know which one it is prior to our fab locking on Sunday evening.
All right. Last but not least of the pitching injuries and kind of segues into our final piece of news as well. Jose Buto hits the IL for the Giants. This opens the door for Blade Tidwell to take his place on the roster. He's expected to at least start in the bullpen as Buto was. But do you expect Tidwell to kind of force the issue and get a spot start in the next week or two, making him a little bit more interesting to Fab this week?
Yes, I expect him to be probably Nick's man up. Tyler Malley it's looked a little rough so far. The injuries early in his career just side-railed him. I think he was going to be so much better than we've seen out of him. But that could be an opportunity if he continues to struggle as well. We know all teams use six starting pitchers fairly often. So, yeah, I do think he'll get an opportunity soon. Mm-hmm.
Tidwell, of course, you know, one of the top prospects for San Francisco for quite a bit of time now. So, yeah. Would like to see.
Yeah, he's almost 25 years old.
Yeah. It's hard to say like the top one of your top prospects when you're that old, and it's just been a minute.
Yeah.
Well, that helps me segue into our final piece of news here about top prospects. We got a lot. I kept mixing up all of these announcements because they were the same announcement, but for three different guys, right? First, we had news in Milwaukee that they were tying up their shortstop prospect, Cooper Pratt, for $80 million over the course of, I think, the next 8 or 9 years. And then Seattle followed suit with their own deal with Colt Emerson for $95 million. And then we got the word that Connor Griffin for the Pirates is going to make his MLB debut, and it's because they signed him to a 9-year deal, $140 million. Griffin is the only one of the three that has made his debut, though, of those three contracts, scoring a run, getting a double in his debut on Friday. Griffin pretty much rostered everywhere, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I'm not too concerned about that. Emerson, Pratt, when do you expect to see them get that official call now that they're signed?
I think it still could be a while. You know, typically when we see these young guys sign, especially when they haven't played in a major league game, we automatically assume we're going to see them soon. That's why they signed them. So they don't have to manipulate the time. We can bring them up. But, I've been hearing a little bit about some teams are maybe doing this and may continue to do it because if there does end up being a salary cap, previous contracts may be grandfathered in and not affect that salary cap. Mm, okay. So they're trying to lock these young players' salaries in at today's rate, and 7-8 years from now, they're bargains, right? If that is the case, I'm going to say this really quickly, and then I'm going to drop it because I don't want to go down this path and be all sad the rest of the show. If that's the case and that's what the owners are doing, we're in for a long work stoppage, unfortunately. That's what I see out of this, them signing these young guys, very unfortunately. Connor Griffin, we expected to see him a week ago. They just waited for the home opener, I think. Right. And what a debut for the home opener. First at bat, double in the gap to give him a lead. That's amazing.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Give them that. Yeah, obviously Seattle's done this as well in the past. And then, you know,
kind of got burned by it. So if they're doing it.
Yep, that's true.
Me think, you know.
Scott Kingery, also the name that always comes to mind with mm-hmm. these deals that you signed before even making your debut. But yeah, we'll see how long it takes. Pratt, if I read correctly, had not played above double A prior to this this season. And then Cole Emerson, again, just there was a lot of theory that because J.B. Crawford was doing a rehab stint and he was playing mm-hmm. in the same game as Emerson. Theory was that maybe they come up together and one of them ends up playing a little third base as well as shortstop. So that did not happen. J.B. Crawford did get called back up from his rehab stint. Emerson stayed down. All right. Well, that is all she wrote. Plus, there's a ton of other stuff that happened throughout the week. I tried to narrow it down to as much fab related things as possible. As anybody watching, or if you've seen on our, if you're on your podcast, whoever you're getting your podcast, we got some new graphics here, Kevin.
I love it.
And it specifically calls out the fact that we are a fab focused podcast. So as a reminder, that's what we're talking about all season long. Of course, in the off season, you know, we stray away from that because there's no fab to do. We got to talk about something, but all season long you come to us and all we're going to be talking about are fab related things. So, yeah, shout out, to Patrick and I think Patrick made all of these, over, our new director of podcasting over at pitcherlist.com. So shout out to him. And you've seen a lot of the podcasts across the Pitcherlist network getting some new duds. So cool. Really cool to see that and getting a little refresher. We've been at this for what, 6 years, 5 years now, Kevin. And so it's nice to get a fresh coat of paint.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about, breaking down some, you know, who we need to go after in fab. We are going to quickly talk about the extra fab that we have to run. But we're going to do that after this break. All right. We are back. Of course, you are still listening to On the Wire. We are listening to us every single week. Make sure that you're also taking advantage of the other podcasts that are on the Pitcherlist Podcast Network, especially the daily ones. Nick Pollock is continuously doing his Plus Pitch podcast, highlighting all the starting pitchers from yesterday's game. And he's added back in all of his streamer recommendations for today's games and tomorrow's games as well. So make sure you're listening to that on the daily. And then we've got Jake Crumpler and Carson Picard doing the First Pitch podcast every single day. So keep an eye out for that one, or an ear out for that one specifically, as they break down all the highlights and everything you need to know to win your fantasy league on a daily basis. With all that, Kevin, we have something that is the opposite of daily coming up, and that is the Cutline / Slam best ball fab period on the NFBC. If you can find it, I had to throw some little minuscule jab at all the changes that have happened over the NFBC platform the last couple of days. I know they'll nail it down, and I know change is hard. Let's just throw that out there to everybody. So just bear with it and, you know, roll with it, man, and just figure out what you're doing. Find where your fab is, find where all your stats are. You're going to get through it. That's just my little tip to everybody out there. But if you're playing in any of those formats, Kevin, we've got an extra fab period to worry about. There's only two fab periods in this style of game. The first one runs, and you still have the same $1,000 budget, right? Mm-hmm. And the first one runs on Tuesday. Overall, I mean, we talk about this every year, but overall, yep. How much are you looking to spend? And, you know, any general tips to, you know, get people to not only remember, especially Razz Slam. I think I've been guilty of this in the past. A lot of people forget to do it. I think in your cut line, you're less likely to forget, just because, you know, money, is involved in that. But, what general thoughts do you have on how you're gonna handle this fab period?
The biggest thing for me is any long-term injured players or anyone not getting playing time, and I don't see that improving, regardless of the reason, sent down, utility guy that doesn't play often, anything, I'm going to look to replace them. And the biggest thing is long waterfall lists, because you want somebody in that spot. It's a best ball. You never know when somebody's going to have a great week. All it takes is a couple home runs in a week. And even guys that Nico Horner, I think, had a 2 home run game last season, right? Anybody can do this, right? So you want somebody that's playing, available to use their stats when they have a good game. So long waterfall falls, make sure you get everybody replaced. We did draft these leagues fairly early, into February, early March. So there were some changes. We draft 42 players. So even the prospects like Connor Griffin that didn't start with the team, but then got called up, is going to be rostered. But double check. Each league can be different. But with players like that, if there is somebody that slipped through because we drafted earlier and they can be a big improvement to your team, I have no problem spending up to 60% of my budget in this first fab run.
Mm-hmm.
We only have one other one, and you want to have plenty of money left to make sure you can fill all your gaps then too. But players you're getting now, you have several more weeks that their stats can help you.
Exactly. And then, if you spend 75% of your budget this week or for this one, it just means your waterfall bids have to be that much longer in the second round. I'm just looking at my roster right now, and I'm like, oh man, like I don't even remember drafting Zach Wheeler, and I'm like, I'm just trying to see the minimum amount of red. I only have 3 guys in red on this roster, Cade Horton unfortunately being one of them. So he'll end up, as much as it'll hurt, he'll end up being a drop in that scenario, exactly for the reasons you just mentioned. Kevin,
mine's another guy we talked about in the news on this show. It's Zach Eflin. That's who I have. But fortunately, it's when I'm looking at the free agent list, some of the pitchers that we weren't sure we were going to see at the beginning of the season, or even, I hate to say this, we weren't sure would still be healthy, like Lance McCullers Jr., who had a nice outing earlier this week. But I think since most of us, when we're drafting, at least the Raz Slam version of the cut lines, we don't take a lot of early pitching. I'll probably grab some of these pitchers that became available in this first run just to shore that up a little bit.
Yeah. And so when you drafted, like you said, this is a weird roster size. It's 42, not 50 in the draft and hold, or 30, like everything else. What is your pitcher to hitter ratio typically looking like?
I have currently on my roster 17 pitchers. That would leave 25 hitters.
I have 21 pitchers on this roster. So my question really revolves around, at this time in the fab period, is there any reason why you would try to stray away from that? Would you like drop a hitter to get an extra pitcher, or vice versa? Or is that kind of a strategy more apt to, go toward on the second fab period for sure where you need the most work?
I am looking at my positions, making sure that I have plenty of guys to get in there. I only drafted 3 catchers. I'll leave that. Kyle Raleigh's hasn't been in my lineup in a best ball yet. How crazy is that for a catcher? he hasn't made the lineup with his slow start. But I'll stick with my 3 catchers. That's the thing I'm going to look at. Make sure I have my coverage at each position. I remember Todd Zola talking about different best ball formats a few years ago. And he was talking about, lots of times in drafts, we'll kind of spread, move guys around, and we don't mind if we have take a second shortstop early. You can play him at middle infield, and it takes a shortstop out of the pool for everybody else in some leagues. But in best balls, that's not really what you want to do, because you want an elite guy at every position. And hopefully that's the guy that scores high for the week and gets thrown in there. You want to give yourself the most opportunities for every high scorer on your team to be used in your lineup. So that's what I'm looking at when I'm looking at my different positions. Do I have enough guys at each position where I feel like I'm actually going to get somebody in my lineup each week that's scoring points for me? Right. You look at your, when you're looking at your lineup page for these best balls, the last couple of guys many weeks are 0 points, maybe even negative, that are in your lineup. They were the best you had at that position. So that's what I'm looking at. I want to try to make sure I'm not short anywhere. But for the most part, yeah, I went a little light in pitching. I'm losing a pitcher due to injury. I'm probably going pitching heavy and may end up with a couple more than 17 pitchers. I like to have 20. I like 20, but you have 21. So yeah, I'll probably add at least a couple.
And I think the reason I had so many pitchers is I think I waited until the 14th round before I actually picked up a pitcher. So I'm just like, and now I'm just, the rest of my roster is pitchers.
And but everybody in my league was doing that. There was still really good pitching left at that point.
There was. man, I was just looking at last week's. Augustin Ramirez was in my lineup. He got me negative 1 point in last week's standings. It made me just try to multi-position eligibility is huge in this, right? Because you have, you know, the algorithm has more opportunity to kind of move guys in the best situation. But I'm like, oh, but man, but Salvi got me 12 points. He ended up going into my first base slot. If he wasn't first base eligible, he would have kicked Augustin Ramirez out. But then who would have got put into my first base? Oh, man, I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole because I'm just going to trust that the stats know it. I mean, the algorithm knows what it's doing. And just, I hate seeing that negative result in your starting lineup.
Yeah, it's rough.
All right. Well, we got two sets of fab periods to go through. We still have our typical weekly one. What's nice is that this fab period happens on Tuesday that we're talking about with Cutline and Razzlam. So at the very minimum, just set your fab for that on Sunday while you're doing all of your weeklies, right? That way you're not forgetting, at least you're setting yourself up and you can fine tune it on Tuesday before it actually runs. But at least if life gets in the way, you've already got something kind of set and ready to go. But Kevin, let's talk about our actual recommendations here for the week, starting of course with our power categories. Home run, RBIs, who are we liking to fill that gap if that gap has already started to creep up on us this early in the season?
Well, I have a few, and it's because they don't all have a lot of availability in 15s. They have some good availability in 12s, but that's why I went with several players. And Austin Hayes has some great matchups coming up this week. He's 98% rostered in 15s in the main event, but only 44% in online championships. They face four left-handed pitchers this week. So he will definitely get those starts. He also plays about half the time versus righties. So I expect to see five or six games out of Hayes this week with four of them versus lefties. That'll be nice. Jordan Walker, we've brought him up a couple of times since the season started already. He's off to a decent start, just the one home run, but he finally got that one home run. He's making some contact. He's 98% rostered in main events, but 66%. He's available in a little over a third of online championships, and I just think he could do something here. Lo Perfido, five out of six versus right-handed pitching this week. And he's been getting those starts versus righties. I like to see him. He's only 37% in 15s, 1% in 12s. So love him there. I mentioned Rhys Hoskins last week. He's got some nice matchups. And I think he'll get in the lineup, back in the lineup this week, as they're facing four left-handed pitchers this week as well. And another guy we've talked about, he's 98% rostered in 15s, but only 31% in 12s, and that's Luke Raley. He's playing it versus every right-handed pitcher for Seattle and performing well, and they have 5 out of 6 righties this week. So there are some options there for power. In 15s, the guy most available is Loper Fido. Rhys Hoskins is available in more than a fourth of them. And then the other guys I mentioned are pretty much rostered in 15s, but they all have nice availability in 12s.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, I mean, I mentioned this a lot. I think we both mentioned it quite a bit. Like, it's easy. Well, not easy. It's easier than I think many people think to stream stolen bases based on the matchups. And I think in a recent show that I did over at RotoWire, Dave McDonald was in the chat talking about how, you know, how he didn't say easy, but again, like, streaming power is, as long as you're following those matchups that you just outlined, is definitely a strategy that should be, you know, should be taken into account. You have to know yourself, and the fact that you have to know yourself, that you're watching what these matchups look like, what they could look like. And so for you to be able to break that down for everybody, I think is extremely useful.
We talked about him earlier. That's amazing. And I agree with that 100%. And we should reiterate as well. We talked about him earlier, but for power, with what's going on with the Mets, when we were talking about that mess, Mark Vientos has started 5 straight games, 2 of them versus lefties, 3 of them versus righties, playing absolutely every day. The other first baseman that they had been using versus righties, we just talked about, it's going to be in the outfield some, Jared Young. So Mark Vientos, I think, is going to get some run here, and he's only 23% rostered in main events, 8% in the 12 team online championship. So Mark Vientos would be actually close to the top of that list for me as well for power this weekend, definitely in 15s.
There you go. All right. We're going to jump into speed in just a moment. But before we do that, we got to take a quick break. And I have to take a break because this dog really wants to go outside. I'll be right back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
All right. Like, we are back. Took a weird break time. Guys, sorry. Had to let the dog outside. We don't usually break in the middle of our hitter segment, but here we are. So Kevin, we're getting into the speed. I mentioned how, you know, with the right matchups, we can follow along with our speed, our stolen bases, scoring some runs, anybody going toward the top of the lineup that you've noticed. But either way, who you might be targeting if we need a little bit of speed.
Yeah. You mentioned it, top of the lineup. And I don't know if this will stick. Saturday, Colorado's facing a lefty. But the last two righties they have faced, Troy Johnston has been the leadoff hitter. And that was dropping Jake McCarthy out of the leadoff spot. They've dropped him down to the bottom of the order. If that sticks, Troy Johnston's in for a nice run here. He's hitting 7th versus the lefty on Saturday. But both Wednesday and Friday, the last two games they had versus right-handed starters, he was leading off. And so that's a lot of opportunities, especially in that great BABIP ballpark for getting on base. The leadoff guy should have a lot of running opportunities there.
There we go. Of course, you know, keeping an eye on, if you are a PL Pro subscriber, you've got access to weekly projections over at PL, they're powered by PLV. I'm attempting to kind of sort these to see. The thing is, you got to import that spreadsheet and then look at what your actual availability is. Otherwise, you get really excited about, oh my God, look at all these guys that are expected to have X amount of stolen bases, X amount of runs scored. And you're like, oh wait, no, none of these guys are available. And so always a good resource as long as you know what you're looking for. So highly recommend taking a look and looking to that. To see who might be the ones that are the obvious in there as well. I mean, we talked about him earlier. Mickey Moniak, PLV, really seems to like what he has going on in his first full week back with the Rockies. Doesn't hurt that, you know, half those games are going to be in Colorado. But should be a positive impact with all of those at bats that he should be getting. Maybe I'm jumping the gun into opportunity, but the name definitely stood out. Well, speaking of then, let's get right into opportunity, Kevin. As we look ahead, we do have a handful of teams that have seven games and thus more at-bats and more plate appearances available to their lineup. That includes the Chicago White Sox, Detroit Tigers, Kansas City Royals, the Minnesota Twins, Miami Marlins, Cincinnati Reds, Colorado Rockies, and San Diego Padres all get seven games. And we're finally got our first week of normal expected off days. Everybody either has an off day on Monday or Tuesday, and nobody has both. So everybody's got six games if you don't have seven, pending any rainouts or doubleheaders, which we have already experienced twice this week, this past week. Colorado will be splitting their time in those seven games with three being hosting the Houston Astros and then four over the weekend, the long weekend in San Diego. Cincinnati also splitting, but in the opposite direction. They'll be starting off with four at Miami, but they've got three at home to over the weekend against the Angels. And then at the Athletics will be away from West Sacramento all week against the Yankees, against the Yankees for three, spending all their time in New York, three against the Yankees and three against the Mets. And then Kevin, you've got a note here too, just to point out that the White Sox do have four games against left-handed pitching, all three out of three over the weekend as well. So obviously something that we want to keep an eye out, especially if you're looking for the right matchups and extra playing time. So with all that in mind, Kevin, and probably especially this White Sox note that you added in here at the end, who looks like they might have a good opportunity ahead of them that we can take advantage of?
No, well, for the White Sox, I'm talking specifically Lenin Sosa. He was really good as their main utility guy last year and a lot of full-time run at second base. And he's kind of slipped to short side of platoon, some playing time against righties to keep him fresh. But yeah, love Lenin Sosa for the weekend for the White Sox. And Gerard Encarnacion, it took an injury, but he's getting the starts at first base now in San Francisco. So definitely versus righties, they have five out of six this week, and he may play versus lefties as well. I don't know that the Giants have another first baseman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, all the guys that we talked about throughout the news section well. Jose Fernandez, Freeman over in L.A. Got a lot of guys that are looking like they're going to be walking into.
I originally had those guys down for opportunity until we had all these injuries going on.
All right. Well, we've got quite a decent amount of names on the hitter side to consider. Now let's move into the pitcher section, and we will not take our normal break, and we'll just run right into it, Kevin. We're streaming wins. We're trying to volume our way up in the strikeout department as well. Who are you liking for either a two start, a really good matchup, whatever the situation may arise?
I have just a handful this week. There are some nice matchups this week, but so many of the pitchers that are getting starts this week are 100% rostered. Right. It seems like our teams have had a glutton of injuries but there haven't really been a whole lot yet. So the guys we drafted are the guys that are pitching this week. There's not a lot of availability out there. But as we mentioned earlier, I do expect Dean Kramer to get that spot in Baltimore's rotation. Keep an eye out leading up to Fab Lock on Sunday. It could be Cade Povich. And if you want to go a much less, well, I don't know if he would. Yeah, he'll be less expensive. I think most think it's Dean Kramer. Mm-hmm. So I'd throw Povich in there as well. Martin Perez looks to get a start. He's starting on Sunday at Arizona, and then he's back home next weekend versus Cleveland for Atlanta. Atlanta's been putting up some runs, and so I like Martin Perez there chasing wins. He's one of these guys that not super exciting, but he over the years and recent years, he just seems to get the job done when he has those nice matchups. And I, being a lefty like Patrick Corbin, I love these lefty streamers. Jansen Junk, I think, is somebody worth looking at. I believe he gets two starts this week. He gets Cincinnati at home in Miami, so that's nice. And then he does have to go to Detroit. Not scared of the ballpark. The lineup has been hitting some home runs, but Jansen Junk, I think I would take a shot on for two this week. And yes, I did write down Colin Ray. I think he's going to be the guy in Chicago.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And as we talked about in the news section, that schedule is looking pretty nice for him as well, no matter what day he ends up taking the ball. The two start, the expected two starters are they're all taken. Sorry. The only one that, even in the main event, even Jameson Taillon is only 3% available across the main event. Just guys that are expected to get that two starts. Maybe Jose Soriano is available in a shallower league. Jansen Dunk probably be the one that would be most available. What was Junk's? 28% rostered in the main event. So he'll be a popular ad across those deeper leagues for sure. But good to be in it just in case he's not. So get them in all of your bids as well. Ratios, Kevin, we are still trying to pad the ERA, the whip, whether you are dedicating one of your starting spots for this, or if you're just continuously just trying to strike gold, as you say, this is the time to stream, so that you don't have to stream later on. And the only way to catch lightning in a bottle is to continuously do that. But maybe try to do that in the safest way possible by padding your going after the guys that aren't going to blow up your ERA and your whip. Who is the name or names that you want to add to our continuously rolling list of the 2026 season for our ratios?
All right, my guy this week, this kind of will segue into our Knicks category as well, because
it tends to do that.
But I really like this guy. I want him on my rosters this week for being my reliever. I can throw in my lineup for ratios when I want him, and also as a save speculative ad. And that's Keaton Wynn in San Francisco. He's been amazing, and I see that continuing. And not only is he going to get late inning opportunities as a setup guy, I think he's definitely the next guy up in San Francisco if Ryan Walker doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good talk about Caleb Killian throughout spring training as well, and he seems to be, at least as far as the pecking order goes, right up there with Wynn. But he hasn't, from what I could tell, gotten a hold all season, and where Wynn has. There's something to be said there. As far as how the Giants actually want to utilize him. Good call out. Did he pitch today? Because he hasn't pitched in a while. So if my only hesitancy is if he does pitch back to back.
I doubt he pitches today. They're down 9-0.
All right. Well, he'll probably Well, he'll probably, because he hasn't pitched in then the 5 days, he'll probably pitch on Sunday, which isn't enough to keep him out of your out of their usage.
Oh, no, he did. He pitched today. Okay. It didn't go well. A couple of hits and a walk. He only gave up one run, but he gave up a couple of hits and a walk. That'll make him cheaper tomorrow night.
Yeah, there you go. So my only concern would be if he does pitch on Sunday.
Right, two in a row, we won't see him for a few days.
Yeah. So always something. You watch that usage as well. All right, well done on the segue then, Kevin, into the saves category here. Not a lot moving around with the exception of one piece of news that we left off the news section, which we talked a little bit about last week. But Carlos Estevez did officially get put on the IL. I don't know if it was officially pulled out of the job before going on the IL or not, but either way, he's on the IL, so it doesn't really matter. What's happening in Kansas City that you expect to be on everybody's radar come, you know, 10 o'clock tomorrow?
I think for the most part, it is going to be Lucas Erceg. He hasn't looked great, but he has converted two saves, but he hasn't been great. They only have one other lefty besides Matt Strom in the bullpen. I still think he's the setup guy, but he could be used earlier and could be used in the ninth inning if the matchups dictate that as well. Daniel Lynch has been used a lot over the past few days, this first week of the season. So they may not be saving Matt Strom early in the week. For now, John Schreiber did get a save. That was when Lucas Erceg had pitched both Saturday and Sunday when Schreiber got that save on Monday. And I sent you a text because you're the only one that I heard bring up John Schreiber last weekend when we were already talking about this. No, from what I have seen, and I watched every Kansas City Royals game played this week, the bullpen as a whole just looks bad. That leads me to believe as soon as Carlos Estevez's ankle heals, if he gets any of that velocity back, he was 92 in the game he pitched. He had been in the upper 80s in spring. If he gets his velocity anywhere close to the 96 we saw last season, this job is his. He's getting it back. So I'm going to snatch him up anywhere I see him drop, because I don't think this is going to be long. As long as he can just get a couple of ticks back. And I feel like he was going to work up to that. Yeah, he gave up six runs. It only took three to beat him. It used to be he would have only given up three runs. Remember, you didn't used to get credit for that home run. Remember that, Adam?
Yeah.
As soon as the winning run crossed the plate, the game was over.
It didn't matter.
I think Estevez is going to get this job back fairly quickly. For right now, Erceg is 100% rostered. If I was going to take a stab here, it would be Matt Strom. But like I said, Daniel Lynch got used a lot this week. So Strom may be used earlier in games, at least early in the week.
Are you a lot happening in Tampa Bay? Probably worth looking at. Just the fact that Garrett Clevinger did go on the IL himself, leaving just Ian Seymour being the lone lefty in that bullpen of note. But Griffin Jacks taking it on the chin a little bit earlier in the week as well, taking the loss. Looks like Brian Baker has a shot at, you know, being the closer there. We had a save out of Kevin Kelly earlier in the week as well. Is this, you know, with all the talk over the last decade of like Tampa Bay not, you know, always mixing and matching, not necessarily true. A lot of people talked about this as well. If they have a guy who's healthy and they trust them, that's usually the guy, right?
Right. It's everybody else that splits the rest. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. That's the way they typically do it.
Most of us going in saw Griffin Jacks as the obvious name here. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to be the case. So is this a situation that you're speculating on, that you're trying to get a piece of, or are you just kind of waiting for the dust to settle?
I think it's Brian Baker for now. It looks pretty obvious to me. They've been saving him. They haven't had another opportunity since Wednesday, and they had Thursday off, so it's only been a day. But Brian Baker hasn't pitched since last Sunday. it really looks to me like they want him to be that ninth inning guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So expect, I think that's a good observation in general. Like we talk about like, well, they're not using him. Like, well, there's no opportunity.
Right.
We're not going to throw him out there just for the sake of throwing him out there unless it gets to, you know, a certain situation where it's been just way too long.
We've seen Jax do this for short stints mm-hmm. before. I expect him to get the ninth inning back before too long, but I think they're going to go with Baker for a bit.
Yeah. Baker still available in a handful of your 15 teamers, 88% rostered in the main event. So, you know, he's still out there in 12% of those. Sure, more readily available in 12 teamers as well. So you know, get him in your waterfall bids, especially if you didn't draft a whole lot of closers and you knew you were going to have to put in the work throughout the course of the season. Any other bullpens that you kind of noticed either falling apart or you want to speculate on the next man up?
Arizona, it's been ugly. Paul Sewald, everybody was excited about, and then it hasn't been good. They don't appear to have really any great options. And I know it's still going to be a while. He's only had a few bullpen sessions and he had an internal brace put in, but this is AJ Puck's job as soon as he comes back. So keep an eye on that. As long as he's progressing well in leagues where you can add him as soon as you have a spot that you don't need, AJ Puck's going to have this job the day he comes back.
It's so funny because it's like when AJ Puck came in and then Justin Martinez was they were like going back and forth as closer. It's the same thing's going to happen this year. AJ Puck's going to come back just slightly before Justin Martinez. Justin Martinez is going to come in and they're just, we're going to see how they get along. But yeah, that situation is pretty terrible.
I still don't want anything to do with West Sacramento. So I haven't even really paid attention. I think the favorite Sterner, I think it's pretty obviously not now, but I don't care who it is.
It does look like Jordan Romano probably has that job for the Angels, as we speculated on last week. As you know,
I'm holding Kirby Yates though.
Sure. Why not?
Did you see that Jordan Romano went for $555 in FAB in a league?
I did not.
And there were several over 300. And we talked about it being triple digits. In fact, Cole Sands had a lot of triple digit bids as well. We talked about that. But I honestly believe Yates may take this job back very quickly, even if Romano's performing okay. Obviously, if he's dominating, I don't think he will. But we haven't seen Romano dominate for a long time. I cannot see making that high of a bid. If it works, great, and they're smarter than I am, I just don't see it.
You also have to – it's not even that he's got the job or he'll have the job. You also do have to start considering how many opportunities are the Angels going to give anybody who's got that job. So, you know, he's got the one this week that he did walk himself into or that he earned. And then they provided to him, but they haven't provided any opportunities since, from what I can tell. The rest of the bullpens, for the most part, from what I can tell, are just kind of moving along as we expect, with minimal impact via injury, as being pretty much the main one in that realm. And then obviously there's some injuries happening in Tampa Bay, as we mentioned, but not necessarily to the closer, but just to the depth in general, to the entire bullpen. All right. Well, Kevin, we ended the news section with a bunch of wild card like players. Obviously Griffin is not available, but the other guys will be available once they make their debut. Cause I don't think they were drafted anywhere. And then dropped or drafted and kept. But of those who are available now, Who's your wild card name that you're keeping an eye on?
That's available now.
Okay. I mean, they ought to be available. You can't bid on them if they're not available.
Right. So this one's boring, Adam. Then I have a name that is going to be more up your alley, but he's not available to us yet. But he is the guy I'm keeping my eye on very closely and for the same team. Five guys in West Sacramento have played every single game, one of those being Max Muncy. Now, he doesn't have a ton of power, but he's got a little bit. Doesn't have a ton of speed. We have seen him steal double-digit bases in the minors just a couple of years back. Strikeout rate has been an issue throughout the minors. He's projected for right around a 30% strikeout rate by many of the projections, but double-digit home runs in less than 400 plate appearances. And as of right now, he's going to blow that 400 plate appearances out of the water. He is one of the handful of players playing every single day for the Athletics. I do expect his batting average to dip probably in the 240-ish range. And that's about what he's projected for, anywhere from about 230 to 250. I don't expect the 269 he's hitting right now to stick, but the couple of home runs already first week of the season, got a stolen base. We've seen him go double digit once again in the minors. So yeah, I think Max Muncy, just for lack of, you know, there's not a lot of power. Didn't want to talk to him in power. There's not a lot of speed. Opportunity, we talked about several guys. So I think Max Muncy in Oakland might give us just moderate, not hurt us anywhere, and help us a little bit in all of our categories, with the exception of batting average, might be a slight hit there. So, and then it's not teammate yet, but I think it could be relatively soon, Leo DeVries. He's still young, but I think he's probably, is he the highest ranked prospect on most lists that we haven't seen now?
Yeah.
McGonagall and Griffin are up. And so let's just get this one out of the way early in the season. I expect to see him, and I expect to see him pretty early as well. And maybe really soon. It's been almost 2 weeks if we're talking about, you know, years of control. So Leo DeVries, I think we're going to see relatively soon.
Yeah. And you get, I mean, of all the guys that could have gotten locked up, whether it's for the reasons that you mentioned or the just in general.
So they can play him. Yeah.
It seems like DeVries would be kind of prime for that due to the organization that he plays for and their future intentions of building and playing a stadium in a new environment. Obviously, I'm talking about Vegas, as opposed to continuously playing in that AAA stadium. It's so funny. What was it? The Giants sent somebody down last week, and it's like the news was like they were sent down to Sacramento, and we're like, wait a minute, what? Did they make a trade? Like, they're still playing in that stadium at the same time that a major league team is also playing there. It's ridiculous. All right, regardless. So that's a fun one. I wanted to get your let me get your opinion on this in this situation. The something we didn't talk about in the news is the Dodgers said that they're going to use a 6-man rotation next week due to just being, you know, a 7-game work week and just with everything going on. You know, Sheehan seems to be fine, but you know, his velocity was a question mark through at the end of spring training and in his first start. And Otani, obviously, you know, we all worried about that. But like, do you expect to see, they did say Robleski was going to get a start and not a follow in this 6-man rotation. But do we start seeing this a little bit more often from the Dodgers throughout the course of the year, where they go back and forth between a 6 and a 5, use a piggyback and then don't? And would that give more of an opportunity to start seeing an earlier call up for the likes of like River Ryan, who some thought would actually crack the roster due to a positive spring as well? Are you watching River Ryan? I guess is what I'm saying. Like, are you watching River Ryan or the likes of anybody who's currently down for the Dodgers to get that spot start?
I'm keeping an eye on it. I think this is a tough outing for Robleski at Toronto on Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave Roberts initially said he would get a start on this road trip, is what we heard. And I'm sure people that already rostering Robleski were hoping that'd be this weekend at Washington, not at Toronto. And then, you know, they have the off day Thursday. So that helps them this week. Everybody can have 5 days rest until we get back to, you know, the following week. Are they going to let Robleski have another role here? If he performs well at Toronto, I would hope so. But yeah, absolutely keeping an eye on River Ryan. And yes, to your point, I do think this is something the Dodgers will go back and forth from. They'll have their bullpen days. They'll have their spot starter days. They'll have their piggyback days, depending on the matchup, I think is what they will do. They're making the postseason. They don't care. They just want these guys all healthy in October.
Yeah. They don't. I think the quote was something along the, like, they don't need 130 wins. They just need one more win than, you know, the Padres. or whatever.
Yeah, this is a tough draw for Robleski, but you know, we talked about it in the offseason that he may be the guy that would come in after Otani. They said that they were going to stretch him out slowly, and then he came out and pitched so efficiently he went six innings. So
yeah, I mean, I like Robleski a lot in general. I like him a whole lot more as a follower in general. But that's only if,
because here, we'll know a lot more tomorrow, actually, because this is with Sasaki in the starting rotation.
Sure. Yep.
And if that doesn't go well, as good as he was in the postseason as a reliever, I feel like, I know the Dodgers spent hundreds of millions of dollars on this guy, but at some point you just put him in the role that he excels in. And then that means they have another starter position to fill. And so all these guys can make it in there.
Yeah. That River is Ryan. Unless Sasaki just becomes that piggyback option as opposed to Otani, like, you know, Sasaki goes three, excels, or maybe Sasaki becomes the follower as well, the first man out of the pen every 4 days or every 5 days instead of every 6 days. I'm rooting for Robleski more than anything else. Just want to get as many wins out of that rotation as you can. All right, well, Kevin, man, we got a lot of fab to do both on Sunday and on Tuesday. As an extra reminder to everybody out there, give everybody last piece of advice that they can hopefully take home with them and then utilize in one, at least one, if not both of these fab periods.
Well, it's only our second fab period since the season began and our second fab period where we have a full week of baseball coming up, but it's already our first holiday. Happy Easter to those celebrating, and don't forget to get your fab bids in this evening. If you're listening to us as you're walking to your dog this morning, just go put something in right now. Even if it's very, very cheap on everybody, a nice waterfall. You have to, for your injured guys or guys that got demoted, go set them right now. They don't have to be the final piece, but if you do forget and don't make it back later, you have it in there and you hopefully get coverage. So you at least have a starting lineup of guys that are going to get you some counting stats. And then, yeah, that I'm going to say that every holiday weekend of the season, we always do. But I really want to emphasize, you know, everybody knows this. I need reminded of it often. There's a few elite baseball players that have started off very slowly. There's nothing wrong with putting them on your bench. Could you miss a 2-home run game and a 3 or 4 home run week or half week out of somebody? Sure. But I'd rather miss that than have another 1-for-19 out of Kyle Raleigh in my lineup. Right. So you can put elite stars on your bench. It's fine.
Don't
drop them though.
Yeah. just
don't drop them.
You're just putting them into the bench slot. You're not using that little negative, that little minus sign. That's fair. And maybe that is the reason why some platforms utilize a do not drop list, just for your own safety. all right. Well, with all of that, that is going to do it for episode 249, Kevin. 249. We got episode 250 next week. So join us for that. But that is going to do it here. After all that, I am Adam Howe. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.